This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Men Talk on Plains FM 96.9, a playful search for understanding and appreciation of men. Your hosts are Donald Pettit from Canterbury Men's Centre and me, Ian Ferguson, coordinator of International Men's Day in New Zealand. Today we talk to Damien from Heybro, a support line for men who feel they're going to harm a loved one or family member. The number is 0800 Heybro or 0800 439 276. We recorded the show using video conferencing during the COVID-19 lockdown. We'd like to thank the Christine Taylor Foundation for Mental Health for supporting this show.
Damien, could you tell us a little bit about both Heybro, but then about yourself as well?
Oh, sure. Kia ora koutou. Ko Damien Takaungua, no o tatahi hau. My name's Damien. I'm 44 years of age. I've been in Christchurch for 15 years, born and raised in the mighty south of Invercargill. I've journeyed my way up here to Christchurch. Prior to working at He Waka Tapu, I've never ever had any experience in this field, Heybro, domestic violence, family violence. My background is freezing works, shearing sheds, butcheries. So father of two, a daughter who's 21 and a son who's 18. Been with my wife for too long, 23 years now.
Would you like us to edit that out?
married for 17, and now we're grandparents. So we have a two-year-old grandson and a 2-month grandson. So yeah, that's a bit about myself in terms of I've never worked in this field before. I've been at He Waka Tapu now for about 4.5 years, yeah. And I started in Te Reo Matatini with a scholarship. Working in alcohol and drug. And halfway through that, I was seconded to work in the family violence, domestic violence team at He Waka Tapu. Had a hard transition to make because I knew I had my own issues around family violence and domestic violence. And if it wasn't for my wife, I probably wouldn't be where I am today, as you know, she gave me a lot of strength to sort of get through that and work through it. So, being a facilitator with men, I struggled because I had the same issues, and I felt like I wasn't a worker. I felt like I was one of the guys that should have been sitting on the other side. So, yeah, been in that space for about 4.5 years, working in family violence, domestic violence at He Waka Tapu.
So that'd be group work and...
Yes, group work, individual work, both MOJ, Ministry of Justice and Corrections. So I've done a lot of that and now also work at the prison under Ministry of Justice for men who have protection orders currently. And now I manage the family harm space for domestic violence, family violence at He Waka Tapu. And in all of that, out came 0800 Heybro. Which started back in June 2018. Prior to that, working with my wife, who's actually my boss as well, I must add.
She's, oh, is she? Okay.
She's operations manager of He Waka Tapu. And so it was one night just sort of lying in bed and I guess just doing the work that we've been doing and seeing the men that come through and the issues and, you know, the lack of communication, the breakdown of things, and
very much ambulance at the bottom of the cliff too, isn't it? You know, all the damage has been done and hearts broken.
Oh, very much so. And so, yeah, out of that, I was thinking, well, how do we capture this before they end up in prison or with a protection order or on a sentence with probation. And lying there with my wife, I was thinking, what, you know, 23 years. I turned to her and I said, look, you know, I'm not perfect. And I said, in our arguments, in our fights, I said, you know, you have everyone. You know, you have your mother, you have my children, you have the auntie, you know, all your friends, all your support. I said, you have everyone that will rally behind you and listen to you. But I said, who do I have? And yeah, she looked at me and I was just thinking, well who do we have? Who do I have? Who am I going to turn to? Am I going to call up my dad and say, we've just had a fight? Am I going to talk to my son and go, geez, son, I don't know what I'm doing, and anything like that? So as we know, as men, we hold on to those things. We don't like telling people our issues and problems. And my wife said, well, what are you going to do about it? And I said, well, what are you going to do? And just about had an argument that night about it, you know. And I said, did a bit of research the following day and just was looking out there what is for our men in terms of, you know, being right there 24/7. And we don't actually have anything, not that I could find anyway. So I said to my wife, I said, I'm going to start a 0800 line. And she said, she was kind of going, well, how's it going to work? And I just said, I'll work on the line. We'll create a name and number. I'll just do it. And so took that to our CE, Jackie Burrows, the idea. She said, great, let's get it funded. And so the Integrated Safety Response, the ISR team, Leanne McSkimming, actually jumped on board and said, this is a great idea. So the line is funded. And now I have three men that work on that line 24/7.
Beauty.
Receiving phone calls, not just in Christchurch, because when I started it, I thought it's just going to be Christchurch. Unfortunately, you can't have an 0800 number for one region. It is all of New Zealand. So we went nationwide. You know, here we are today, a few years down the track, nearly 700 phone calls, far and wide, even from Australia. A lot of external organisations calling us, Oranga Tamariki, Corrections, all throughout New Zealand, DHBs, just other organisations out there going, hey, are you guys real? And, you know, do you guys actually do this? And I'm like, yes, we do. You know, the ISR, the Integrated Safety Response, and the New Zealand Police feel it is needed. And that's why it's funded. So to keep our men on the, you know, to keep the workers there and doing this. Amazing work, actually, you know, for de-escalation first and foremost. Yeah, now here we are today, a few years down the track, and, you know, due to this COVID-19, receiving a spike in phone calls, we've been hit pretty hard. But it's great because for us, the line is set up to listen first and foremost. It's not to judge, you know, it's not to tell them what they're doing wrong, it's just to listen. We know we have to listen before we can do anything. You know, we just can't jump in and go, here's the answer, here's the solution. We need to listen first and foremost to the actual need and to the crisis. So that's what we do first. And then after that, we do the follow-up and then we create the plan. So we can refer nationally. We make phone calls. So we're kind of the middleman that will look for the organisation in the area that they're in Aotearoa. But yeah, we kind of link those men and wahine as well to the right services. So that's pretty much like Hey Bro in a nutshell. We have a system where we capture all our data. All phone calls are logged. And we have all our spreadsheets that tell us exactly what's going on. We can find the trends, we can find the lulls, the peak times. You know, if we think about, you know, the Warriors losing, sometimes, you know, you can have an increase in family violence just over a sports game. Or, you know, even when the All Blacks lose big games, you know, that the increase is there. And people tend to think, oh, no, that's a joke. But it's actually true. When things happen in the nation, the people actually take notice and react differently to the wins and losses. So when we look at losses, as a nation, especially in our sports, because we put ourselves up on this pedestal and we lose, we can have a spike in family violence, domestic violence.
So what kind of themes would you say see coming out of the guys? Like, who's phoning you up? What are they phoning you about? Obviously, you're not going to share any true stories, but I'd love to hear a few stories. You could make something up for me that kind of fits with a guy, you know? You know, instead, like, I'm a social worker, and you could tell me at that level, I'd rather keep it as stories, because that's what our listeners would be relating to more, I think.
You know, for example, in the far north, the theme is around the lack of work up there. And so being in a house in the far north where there isn't a lot of work, and then when the work has come about, it's never enough money. We've got children in the mix as well. And what we know now is that our children want just about anything and everything, you know, whether that be a phone, internet, access to this. So, you know, a lot of the things that we're finding are that alcohol and drugs are definitely a big part of you know, their story. A lot of jealousy is a big part of their stories as well.
Like jealousy of another partner or another person on the edge, or ex-partners, or
jealousy, trust issues, you know, a big, just sort of looking at all the data that we've collected and looking for stories, a lot of similar ones are the jealousy and the trust. The meth use and the alcohol is big. At the moment, synthetic cannabis is big. So that's a lot of our themes. And then, you know, there's the frustration of the no work, being on the benefit, trying to have the addiction there. So that is really, really common with our men and women, the addiction, the no money, the lack of work. Then we chuck in the mix with social media. You know, we chuck the phone in there that they're messaging other people. So hard to nail one story.
It sounds like you're talking about a guy, maybe he's on his second marriage and he has a bit of a drinking problem and uses that to deal with stress, and his partner's ex-partner kind of pops up now and again, and you know, he's having trouble at work, and so he'll have some drinks, and occasionally things will get out of hand, and he'll think, oh, well, I better call someone, or things are going to go a bit south.
That's definitely it. Ian, you have nailed it. That is really the theme. We are finding the age of the men that are calling in, you know, tend to be in this mid-25 to, you know, late 40s range.
Family age. Young family too, you know, yeah.
Yeah. You know, always this seems to be, you know, a trend of children in the relationships that are witnessing, or you know, it is happening to them, the violence or abuse.
One of the things I wanted to ask was, like, when are these guys calling you? Is it are they kind of in crisis, or is it like after the fact?
Yep. So a majority of the phone calls are in crisis. If I was to chuck a percentage at it, you've probably got 70% are ringing in crisis. 30% are probably ringing after it's happened. So, we have our own policies, procedures, our own pathways of doing things. So, you know, the confidentiality is big, but if we suspect any of the three harms are there, we have to call the police first and foremost. So we learned a few things the hard way when we first started the line, just finding our feet and boundaries and stuff like that. Yeah, at least 70% would be calling in the moment of it happening and having that feeling and thought of actually doing it. So I would say 70%, maybe if not a little bit higher.
That's beautiful. Guys, you know, getting support at that time, like you said, just when they need it. That's beautiful, eh? Like, how are they finding you? Are they going online and saying, I'm losing it again? Or, you know, they go looking online, or somebody primed them with a, hey, here's a phone number if you ever lose it again?
So we advertise social media, and Corrections Ministry of Justice have put it out there as well. So a lot of GP services have the number as well. So we always ask, how did you find out about the number? And they might have someone that shared it on Facebook. you know, oh, I was at the doctor and they recommended to call this line. But a lot of the times they call, it's not okay. And in the not okay, there's a list of numbers in there. So, yeah, they find the HABO number and they call it. Next thing you know, they have someone answer the phone and they're quite surprised that someone's even answered the phone. You know, they're like, oh, okay, so you guys are real.
You're real, you're there, yeah.
Yeah, and we're there. And we're like, yeah, mate, this is the, you know, this is what it's about. So the guys are all trained up in de-escalation. They know exactly how it works in terms of...
I guess they've warned the guy where the limits are too, you know, hey, if you say something, I've got to tell others and all that privacy stuff.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And in Christchurch, we also do, we go to the houses if need. We get the guy to a safe place, yeah. You know, if we have to go pick them up, take them somewhere.
Wow.
So, you know, even if it's just to go around, take them out for a coffee, have a chat, see what's going on, give everyone time to settle down and formulate a plan from there. You know, it doesn't always have to be with He Waka Tapu, you know. There's other organisations out there. There's other people that I believe fit different people. It's not always just about us. It's about who's out there. Just like Canterbury Men's, for example, if they need that service, you know, if they feel that is what's needed, then that's what will happen. We just don't go, oh, come to our place and let's work it out. Because we're not psychologists, we're not counsellors. We don't have those letters behind our names to say that we have PhDs in this and certificates in this.
Yeah, you're a guy who's got some knowledge and you've got some experience from other guys, and that's beautiful. Like, they talk a lot now in the health field about peer-based models and all that, but it really is about engaging a guy where he's at and giving him some space. And it sounds to me incredibly healthy. I'm glad our society supported you guys to get going. Is there anybody else doing this over in Australia?
Well, I think Australia worked really well in the family harm space. I have had some feedback, especially in the league clubs and stuff like that. They work pretty hard on that family violence. You know, I don't want to generalise the league, but just some feedback that we've had that they do work pretty hard in Australia for that, around family violence, domestic violence.
A complaint I've certainly heard from guys online, and this doesn't mean it's reality, but they say, oh, you can't phone the domestic violence helplines because they're only looking to see if you're a perpetrator. And it sounds to me like that's not the ethos you guys are looking for, you know, that you're not coming from. You're just saying, hey, guy, you know, hey, bro.
Yeah.
That's the name, you know, and that's the, you know, hey, we're just here to slow things down, which you want because you're phoning us and working with them from there. Just a bit of history, because I'm a bit older. There is a group in town called Men's Line, but that turned into a phone line about 30 years ago, part of Lifeline. And they used to have a specialty service for men called Men's Line. That closed down about 11 years ago, 10 years ago, before the earthquakes. So they did handle the kind of call that you're talking about now. Yeah. So I don't think they were focused specifically on family violence, but they did provide a lot of support for men in that situation. And I've spoken to people over the years that used to work in that.
Yeah.
So you've got, there's a bit of a heritage there, you know, make you aware of that. You find you got a lot of places to refer guys to, or is that a barrier? Because, you know, obviously some are more, you I think you referred earlier, some of them are actually experiencing more abuse than the other way around. So that's a real issue. There's not like men's refuges around the community.
Yeah. So when we first started the line, it was about networking and finding out, you know, who's out there, you know, where are they? So the guys have a health hub app on their phone. So if they were out and they took a call, and then so they've de-escalated and that, and then they can actually click into the area that they're in, punch in what services are required closest to them, and then all of a sudden, voila, they have, you know, a service that they can access. So, and also we're working in the space of family violence. I get a lot of information through my contract providers for Ministry of Justice and Corrections about all different organisations, different places. So we're always sort of updated on all these external places that work in the family violence, domestic violence space. So all the guys that work on that are, you know, well-knowledged and who's about, who's available. And, you know, I think if you think of Invercargill, for instance, you've only got one place, which is SVS. You know, so if someone was to ring down there, that would really be our only avenue if they were looking at a stopping violence program. So the further north you go, and then you look at Auckland and all those, you know, other organisations up there, there's a lot to pick from. Even depending, it comes down to what suburb they're in, you can find just about any service in the suburbs. So it took us a bit. You know, we got a lot of phone calls from a lot of organisations, and then they're like, hey, we'll promote you guys. So that's what it's all about, is that, you know, that promotion and just getting it out there. The passion for me is we've got too many men in prison at the moment. You know, 220,000 in prison, 117,000 in Māori or Pacifica.
Yeah.
You know, there's a real imbalance going on. And I'm just, I always think to myself, you know, I work in prison and I go, gee, you need out of here. Because, you know, we have that disconnection of who they are to their whānau, the whakapapa, it goes right back. And I'm just going, you know, who are you now? You know? So my drive, you know, the passion for this is actually, you know, I love Hey Bro, but my passion is to look at the justice system and go, what are we actually doing?
Yeah.
We're putting more beds in prisons. You know, we've doubled Rolleston Prison, and now we've added another 200 to Christchurch Men's Prison. We're not solving anything here. We're not fixing anything. Our justice system is broken. And my passion is to fix this justice system. And
you're no longer in, you know, like you're taking us from the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff to, you know, you're getting at the top of the cliff. So that's a good start. Now, you spoke about passion a minute ago. Maybe you can tell us, we asked you to pick a song for today. And you, what was the song you chose again? And can you tell us why?
I think it was The Cat's Away, A Great Big Melting Pot. And I guess at the moment, being in the situation that we are, being in lockdown and in our house, is, I guess I feel we're kind of more together now than what we've ever been. You know, New Zealand's never experienced anything like this. So, you know, we are with our significant others and our whānau and the closest times. And so, yeah, I think that song just resonates with me more and more, that we are in a great big melting pot together, because we're all doing the same thing here. It's apart from our essential workers that are out there doing that frontline stuff. Yeah, I think that's the song for me today.
Guru.
Okay, welcome back. We've got Damien from Hey Bro. Damien, you were talking before the break about other services and what you'd like for the justice system. I remember Nigel Latta, a fairly well-known psychologist in New Zealand, spoke to me once at a men's health conference. He was saying, you know, a good 70% of men in prison, they don't need to be there. We could release them tomorrow with proper supports and they'd be fine. With proper supports, 20% you could release, and you'd have to really work hard with them. But you know, they'd mostly stay out of trouble. And then there's the 10% that you never want to let out. I guess he gave me some insight from his perspective as doing a lot of work in prison. And I've known enough male clients and on a few friends that have been through that process as well. And at least you're shaking your head, thinking actually we can do a much better job. Do you think you guys will expand? Like, do you think there'll be a branch opens up Auckland maybe?
For Hey Bro?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're in discussions with a few organisations throughout New Zealand about having a whānau worker, a navigator, at their organisation under Hey Bro. So, you know, the bigger picture is obviously to have this nationwide workers throughout New Zealand in, you know, say key areas or cities or whatever, or parts of New Zealand that are available on that 24/7. That's the big push for it. You know, for me is to get out there more and more in our organisations and travel New Zealand a bit more. We get invited to a lot of organisations to come and have a talk about it. What does it look like to have someone working under Hey Bro in their organisation? So we're in discussions with Nelson Marlborough, Hamilton, and I'd say Ashburton as well. So yeah, that's kind of the, you know, the bigger picture is to have this, but I don't know how many people working on that line, but it'd be just great to just have a number.
Do you need some more more people to sort of go out and meet men and have that cup of coffee and that sort of thing that you were talking about earlier?
Oh, most definitely, especially those that we can get to. You know, I think it's always good to have kanwahi to kanwahi, you know, face-to-face with our guys because, you know, as we know on a phone, we can't really show emotion or anything like that. And then you've got to try and work out who you're kind of talking to on there. You know, you're trying to draw a picture of someone, you know, create a profile of someone, you know, just by their voice. So, yeah, I definitely thinking that, yeah, we should always get out there as much as we can. And if we have these navigators in these spaces, that navigator is that face-to-face, you know, that can go. You know, if they're based in Hamilton and they had to go down the road, they can go. You know, I believe face-to-face is always going to be better than, the voice. But first and foremost, the voice is important to us because that's the way to get us is on the phone, you know.
Are you finding that there's with the coronavirus, a lot of people developing their access to Zooms and a lot of that visual stuff? And you think you guys will do some experimenting with that? Or?
Well, we're currently doing that. You're currently doing that now, and even just working with our mandated men, you know, under corrections and MOJ, what we found is they tend to give us a bit more information because they give us email addresses, and then we can Zoom them. You know, and stuff like that. I think COVID-19 has definitely helped us develop a lot of things, and especially the workers think differently. I think outside the square on you know, delivering content and even de-escalation. We've done de-escalation for quite a few years now for Hey Bro, but just working outside of Hey Bro itself and with our mandated men, it's just. Yeah, the brain is working overtime on what you can do different and how you can say different and deliver different.
Nice. I imagine it creates a creative crew you'll have there too, because they're responding to these guys and going, there must be a better way, you know? You can quickly care about somebody, can't you, when you start hearing this story? You go, shit, that sounds horrible, man, you know? Even if you're just getting to know this guy, I imagine it's like, what else can I do? Have you thought about conflict resolution? That's a horrible term, but conflict resolution skills. You know, basics. How do you talk to your wife, partner, kids? You know, like there's actual formats and templates that I know we use. My counseling service, I use it with even my counselors if we have some kind of a conflict that we didn't resolve. Like there's actual skill set you can actually learn with each other, where you can actually resolve a conflict. And I don't know if you're in a position to do that, but I'd love to support you if you guys want to talk models like that one day. Oh,
definitely. I think that would definitely help us a lot, Donald, you know, especially in that area. Conflict resolution is probably something we don't sort of focus on.
Yeah. Well, you're triaging and you know, settling somebody down, but that next step could be some guy, you know, says, well, how am I going to stop phoning you guys? You know, I experienced that when I went through a separation with a previous partner and when the family court used to offer 6 free counseling sessions, and they were quite focused on conflict resolution in the couple. So they teach you a skill that you walk away with instead of them being the judge and not the judge, but them being the ref who sorts it all out and sends you back to your corners. And after that, you're going to be fine. That's just creating a self-fulfilling, you know, it keeps them in a job. Whereas, teaching people to actually do a conflict resolution process, you know, how to take turns, you know, how to actually not just take turns, but just really draw that person out and for that time, take 100% responsibility for the whole relationship, both of you, not just one of you doing 50-50 each, but both people say, hey, let's make it 100% each.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I'm gonna figure out what I did wrong. You know, what did I do that triggered you, and what can I have done differently? I really, really, really want to do a better job. And sending that message to the person, I think when I've experienced that, I still do it with my partner. You know, and she's a wonderful woman, sane, middle class, happy, pretty balanced person. But sometimes we get stuck and go back to those skills we had to learn as 40, intelligent 40-year-old middle class people. So these are things that I think we don't teach each other and need to learn possibly as an adult. So I'm not putting it on the schools, but that's something you can do. I know I've tried to get it out through our community. I've done it a few times. I've put it in our resources saying, listen, I offer this to you. And I've done it one-on-one with about 3 guys and they told me it was useful, but it's funny. It's not easy to sell. And yet so much pain is caused by us going round and round and not actually getting to the core of a conflict.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. And I think, Donald, you know, I'll take up any offer if you were to come to Hiwaka Tapu.
Oh, let's do it. Yeah, we'll do a cuppa. And I'd love to sit with you guys when we can actually meet in person again. You know, but talk about actually what could be done, because, you know, any solution I come up with isn't going to be the one you guys use. My daughter went through a hippie school, Tamariki School or Mountain Valley Schools, they're called Summerhill School Model, but they're all about conflict resolution. You know, I've watched them, the kids work it through, and they actually have to run conflict resolution processes and they have to speak in a group about why did I do this and why didn't I do that and what really happened. Very powerful stuff, that personal accountability and the integrity that comes out of that. So, yeah. I think as adults we could really benefit. So let's talk more. You know, I'll buy you coffees and donuts, and we'll all get together sometime in the coming months, and we can actually get together again.
Yeah, I'd just like to touch on that, Donald, by that conflict resolution, and I suppose with the calls we receive, and if they're in Christchurch, and they what tends to happen is they'll do a referral to Hiwaka Tapu, and then they can come into a program, whether it be a group program or individual. And, you know, our base models that we do work off is around that communication, because first and foremost, we know that it's generally that breakdown in communication that you know, the issue has arisen from it. And, you know, we always say it's okay to be angry. It's the action and behaviour that go with it that's not okay. You know, because, you know, we're allowed to feel these ways. Everyone is allowed to. You know, there's no law for it. It's the action and behaviour that follow that's not okay. You know, I could go, you know, I could tell my wife I'm angry. And she's going to go, okay, you know, go, you know, I'm pissed off about this. I'm not, you know. And she's just going to go, okay, you go do what you need to do. You take your time, go do what you need to do. So for me now, I go mow the lawns. I'll do my garden. You know, I'm not avoiding her. I just know that's a place for me that is safe, you know?
And you work it out, yeah. Then you come back in and you got some time.
I think about it, you know, I like to think of us, you know, men, and, you know, Donald, you'll probably tell me, you might blow me up for this, but I always think that we're ovens, you know? We need to be turned on and warmed up and, you know, give us time to think and, you know what I mean? And then at the end of the day, you'll get the result. When the meat's put in and it's pulled out, it's going to be cooked. And, you know, so I think that we process a bit. I like to think we process a bit slower than our women do. You know, and then I think of my wife, or I think of women as like microwaves. You know, a couple of minutes, and they've got it. They've done. You know, they've said what they've needed to. But we capture all that, and we're only really picking up the first line of what she said. And that's nine times out of ten, that's where the problem is. And the first line or two lines, the issue is in there. So I think as men, we hear this. You know, the first few lines, you know, the yous, the eyes, the, you know.
Always, the never.
Yeah. And then so we grab that, and that's what gets us. Because everything after that, it's a blur, you know. So, yeah, that's kind of how I look at things. And, you know, I could be wrong, but I like to think us men need a bit of time.
I don't know that the gender differences are that great, but I think the pathways, even if they are very similar for getting out of it. You know, like both people need space at a moment. They both need to be able to call a timeout. They both need to, you know, commit to also not just a timeout, but a coming back together. And
yeah.
A good model includes all those. So it'd be fun to get those kind of things working. But having said that, again, you know, just to have a place where people try a new behavior, where a guy to call up and say, I'm sick of this, and try something with you guys, talk to one of your guys, and that peer, those peer models, you know, like peers talking to each other, hey, dude, I've been there, means a lot for the initial phase. But also, what do you do to keep sane when this happens? Oh man, I go do the, like you talked about, I go do the garden and, you know, cut the grass. And that's lucky for your wife, by the way. But, you know, that's great. You know, for all I know, we're going to say this on the radio and some guy's going to say, that's what I'm going to do next time. Mm. And, you know, an important part of it is your wife needs to be on board. You know, that like that whole, there is a real problem, I think, where women say, no, we need to work it out now. And she's angry and she wants to work it out now. And many guys are blocked from walking out the door to do the healthy thing, which can be quite dangerous for both parties in the sense of, you know,
yeah,
you know, he has the right, every right to walk out that door and, you know, and self de-escalate. And, you know, that definitely that can cause some real conflicts as well. The police getting involved, you know, man, just trying to get out the door.
Yeah.
Sad stories of that. You might've heard those.
Yeah,
yeah, but I think men and women generally need the same thing from those conflict resolutions, and that's where I think society's let us down. I'm real confident we're going to eventually overcome a lot of this. The whole democratic processes, humanity's come a long way the last 100 years, getting much better at compassionately engaging with each other in complex situations in a world that's no longer black and white. You know,
that's right.
And roles are kind of shifting, and who we are and who I am, and you know, it's all over the place. And never mind pandemics, and in Christchurch we had the shootings last year and the earthquakes 10 years ago. You know, we have to come up with interesting and novel systems to overcome it. So, and what do you say about the women phoning you guys up as well? They're in a situation where they're escalated.
So the woman that we've had call. Have actually asked about how do I get out of a relationship, an abusive relationship, yeah. And so we've had to help facilitate that. Very tough, very hard, you know, because obviously he doesn't know that she's called. You know, so it's the privacy stuff, it's the confidentiality, it's, you know, how do we get her to a safe place? So generally, you know, when we've had Wahine ring, you know, we know that there will more than likely be police involvement, or has been police involvement as well. So there's a lot of background work that has to go into something like that, you know, because that's not about talking to him now and saying, hey, you know, we think there's something happening. It is purely safety first and foremost.
Do you find that some of the women are actually quite ambivalent about leaving if they're phoning you instead of the refuge? Like, or is it they got you, like most women, for example, would normally stream towards one of the other, you know, a local refuge or the it's not okay phone number. You would think that even the name, hey bro, might put a few of them off, but it's still a smaller percentage. Usually they're phoning about their guy, you know?
Yeah. So, and you're right. You know, with situations of women ringing to leave a relationship, you know, that's not a big percentage. The bigger percentage of them ringing is around, you know, can you help my, you know, my spouse?
Can you talk to my guy?
yeah, can you do this? And we're like, of course we can. As long as he's aware that, you know, you're making this phone call, you know, as if he's aware of this, because he might go, hey, I've seen this number, but I don't want to call, babe, you know?
Yeah.
And then so she'll call up, hey, I am calling on behalf of. So that's a majority of them. It's a very small percentage that have rung to leave a relationship. But
okay, yeah. How many of them you'd say are actually the guy, they've got the guy's approval, they just, he's a bit timid or, you know, a bit fuckama or ashamed or whatever, you know, bit of that going on. So is it a good 50% either way where he's not going to engage, or is it 50%? It was fine. Yeah, thanks. The wife put me on, and hey, I'm gonna.
Oh yeah, definitely 50%. That you know, if the you know, partner wife has rung, that guy or that man will then, you know, engage. Do you know what I mean? So I guess that the woman is putting out the feelers, going, hey, yeah, you know, these guys sounded real cool. You know, So.
That's beautiful. You know, that's working together. You know, most people, they do stay together with a conflict, don't they? So, I mean, it's wonderful that, you know, they're at least working together on that and you're coming up with solutions.
Yeah, definitely.
And I know that sometimes that can enable a relationship to continue that may not be the best for the couple, according to some people.
Yeah, and that's true. You know, the worst thing is we would probably never know until something happened, though.
No, of course. You know? Yeah. And again, you're only on a phone and you've only just started chatting to these people. They might have 20 years of, you know, incredible, you know, conflict and, you know, whole family, large history, child, youth and family involvement. And yeah.
Yeah. And again, how do you decipher if something is, you know, true or false, you know, by the voice? We have to take it for what it is at that time, you know. You asked about some the calls about sort of, you know, we do tend to receive a lot of our calls of crisis at early hours in the morning, you know, in the afternoon and, you know, in the small hours of the mornings, we get a lot of calls.
As for the jealousy more? And
We tend to find as the alcohol or drugs are involved.
Okay.
You know, generally in that afternoon, if you think about if he's come home from work and, you know, our culture is, you know, our culture of beer and, you know, deserving that beer after work and stuff like that, or going to the pub before you come home. And
Yeah.
So we've definitely found a trend of those calls that come in that are de-escalation in the evening. Tends to be Sundays, Mondays, when there's no benefit. So if you think about the days of benefit come in and there's no food, no, you know, anything like that. So Our system picks up all the trends that are happening. So, you know, when we report back to our funders, we can show them the trends. I've had the privilege to sit with Jacinda Ardern a while ago when she came to Christchurch and tell her about Haybro as well. So it's about her, and she's well aware of the work we're doing. And, you know, I just need her voice in it, you know, to push it out even more. And I do sit here and I'll endorse, you know, man up, all these other ideas that are out there, because at the end of the day, we need our men to talk. We need a set of ears. We just need someone to talk to, first and foremost. So all the other ideas that are out there that are happening, you know, I'm not bagging anyone, because we just need more people to talk to more people.
And more guys, and in particular, there's very few men-centric doorways. And I would argue, working in the sector for a while, and I get a lot of female social workers telling me there's not a lot of places directly supporting men explicitly. And running a counseling service, we see about 170 guys a week, or until recently. I mean, it's grown really quickly. Guys will respond if we offer them services that actually do reflect them.
Yeah.
Good on the women for having established a lot of the women's centers up and down the country. But I feel like men have been really left out of the loop. And that's where I'm really glad to see you guys have been really supported. And another thing I'll observe, and I should ask you this instead, but you referred to it earlier. There's a lot of goodwill towards men, I think. That whole idea of men being only a perpetrator or something like this and somebody to be contained. I think, you know, people are well past that. They really want guys to actually have an out and have better lives. And the fact that you're supported when in some, you know, the previous decades, they might not have wanted a service like yours. because it sort of challenges, to be a buddy to a man, he's only meant to be punished. He's only meant to be punished if he's feeling angry, punish him harder, which obviously is, it always was a dumb idea, but I think it was rewarding for people unconsciously. But I get a lot of really positive love towards men that, people really do want men taken care of, and seeing yourself and people like me is actually stepping forward and making it happen. Thank you so much, Damien, from another guy who's been leading, wonderful. It's beautiful. Just thinking somebody's got to do this, and you look around, you realize it's you. Wonderful. Yeah.
I believe working with the men that I've worked with over 4.5 years, we are victims, and I'm not saying that we should be standing in a victim stance.
Yeah.
But we know that, something's happened, along the way. And even if it was 10, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years ago, we know that something's happened. And the thing was is that, in my upbringing, I had no one to tell. I couldn't tell anyone. The police, the system never did anything. And being a witness to, the family violence, no one ever came and arrested, the men that beat my mum, and did these things to my mum. And I guess that was my upbringing. So, we know the environment is what shapes us a lot. Probably up to 70% of the environment is what shapes us and tells us what we should be doing. The men that I've worked with, something's happened.
Yeah, yeah. They just didn't turn out to be aggressive, angry people, did they? They weren't born that way.
No. And so, I can say, I'm a victim. But I've come through it. It took time, it took work, but I've overcome it. And I know that, and I'll say this lady's name, Dawn Tepenia, who works at He Waka Tapu and is a facilitator of our men's program. If it wasn't for her, I probably wouldn't be having this conversation with you guys now.
That's beautiful. I've had some engagement with her over the years, so nice to hear that from you as well. So send her my love. Hey, that's
yeah, you. I will. She taught me so much, and I just she opened my eyes to something else. And especially, being Māori and Pacifica, the actual importance of who we are as people. And I also say that, I'm European as well, and I know my European side, and that is important as well. I'm not just basing this on Māori and Pacifica. It's for all men, so it's our identity, and who do we want to be? Who do we deserve to be, and who are we? So, if Heybro is the start of that for anyone, that rings the line, because what we know is they're ringing in crisis. They're ringing because something's wrong.
It's in good faith, isn't it? It's in good faith.
I'm pretty impressed that these guys are in crisis and are aware enough to go, hey, I need to call someone. I need to sort of do something differently.
Yeah, that does say a lot. I'm thinking we're getting close to the end here, and get into our closing questions with you, Damien. If you could wave a wand and you had one wish, only one wish, and you're not allowed to wish for more wishes, okay?
We're not gonna fall you got that. Me then.
what would you wish for?
What would I wish for?
Your lawn to be done?
Yeah, look, if I had one wish, I guess if I had one wish, it would be to create safe men. Because I believe if we can create safe men, we can create a safe whānau. And if we can create a safe whānau, we can create a safe neighbourhood or suburb. And if we can do that, we can create a safe city, then we can create a safe nation. So if I had one wish, it would be to create more safe men.
Do you have any idea how to do that?
Oh, man, he's already doing it.
Yeah, 0800, hey, bro.
I'm thinking like... earlier down the track, right? Because you were saying that something's happened in the past. So I was just kind of interpreting creating safe men as kind of preventing that kind of thing. Perhaps I've misinterpreted it, but...
No. I believe that we need to look at preconception. We need to look at the idea before even a baby is brought into this world. I don't know what that looks like, how it is. I was privileged to go to a hui in Rotorua last year at Naya Tunungane. The time is now. And got to listen to some really interesting speakers. And one thing that really resonated with me was, far out, imagine if we could work on preconception. Imagine if we could look in the stars, because our destiny was already written. The journey was already written. And I think if we could look at how we could work in some model, some way to, you know, if we look at the age of our teenagers in pregnancy and bringing them into the environment that they're in, and they're just thinking, yeah, I've always had this idea, but I don't know how to create it, form it. But I know that our people, especially in a sense of working in Ngātua, you know, there's got to be a way.
Mm-hmm. So caring for people before they're even born,
basically. Oh, yeah.
That would be something that would a magic wand would be really handy for.
That would be great. There you go. You got me.
And who should we interview next? Now that we're snowballing from you, and you've met us now, you know me already. But Damien, who should we get in next? Somebody you think? Oh, a great leap sideways into another area about men. And
I have the perfect person for you. That would be Machu Brokenshire. Who works? Who has worked in my team? Who now works in the integrated safety response team? He was one of the guys that first started 0800 Haybro with me and worked on the line.
Yeah,
Machu is he's what inspires me to keep doing what we're doing. Because if we're looking at change, this man's the epitome of change. Is that Beautiful. You know? So that's who I would nominate for you guys to talk to next.
Good one, David. Thanks so much for coming along today. I didn't ask you about a karakia possibly to close off.
For sure. Okay. All right. Me no tātou, kia tātou katoa. Te atawhai o tō tātou riki a ihe koraiti, me te aroha o te atua, me te whiwhinga taitanga, ki te wairo a tapu, āke, 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 āmeni. I cannot stop.